Blog Talk Radio.
It's Sunday evening, and welcome to Blog Talk Radio. Your hosts for tonight's show are Robert Brining and Jeremy Dunn. They'll be taking your calls and speaking on the topic of the week. You're encouraged to call in and share some of your life experiences with us. The number to call is 347-215-9442. That number again, 347-215-9442. Welcome to Pause I Am Radio.
Good evening, everyone, and welcome to Pause I Am Radio. I am your host, Robert Brining, and I thank you for joining us. Shortly, I will be joined by my co-host, Jeremy Dunn. I hope you all are having a great evening. Jeremy, are you with me?
Yeah, I got a busy signal when I was trying to call in freaking pieces of crap. Are we live? Are we on?
Yeah, we're on. How you doing?
Oops, I'm fine.
So how you been? I missed you last week.
Yeah, I know. Anytime I'm not here, you miss me. Ouch. I'm good, actually. Went and saw the Addams Family yesterday.
They came out with a new movie?
Musical.
Musical. How was it?
Oh, it was fantastic. Our little Wednesday Addams is all growing up and getting, and she's in love with a normal boy.
Interesting.
Yes. Yeah, it really is kind of, it was a cute concept. It was fun and campy. And you know the gays, we like our fun and campy.
Right.
We really do. We enjoy that.
That's good. I'm glad you enjoyed it. I didn't even know it was coming out.
Oh, it's been out.
Oh, see?
Yeah. Yeah, Nathan Lane and B.B. Newworth were starred in it on Broadway.
Ah. Okay, that was something to see.
Yeah. Yeah. It's good. It was just very funny. Loved Uncle Fester. Just, it was very, very good. Very, very good. So, and walking from the parking lot to the theater entrance, there's the steps that go down. My left ankle is all swollen. Oh, my God, it really is swollen. Holy smokes, I didn't even notice that. But I stepped off the step, and I missed the step. Wow. Holy smokes, I didn't realize how swollen it is, and I'm just looking at it. I've got a big bruise. Jeez. Wow, I did a number there. Hmm. Oh, well, teach me to be trying to walk and talk and text at the same time. Never a good idea.
No, never a good idea.
Because you always miss that last step going down.
Right.
Oh, so enough about me. Let's talk about you. What do you think of me?
I think you're great.
That was
absolutely
an awfully joke. That was diplomatic. I think you're great. I think you're just swell.
Absolutely, absolutely.
So who do we have on tonight? What's going on tonight? What do we got going on?
We're going to have a returning guest tonight. Ken Howard was on. He is a HIV positive therapist who lives in California, and he has a new book that just came out called Self Empowerment: Have the Life You Want. And you know, it was coming out, and I thought it was a great time to have him back on because we haven't had him on since, I think, the very beginning, when we like our first year. So I was like, let's come in and get an update and see how he's doing.
He was writing it then. Okay, now it's all coming back to me.
I think so.
I think he was writing it then. Okay, I'm getting there.
Yeah. It was interesting. So I just wanted to get an update with him. And, of course, when somebody who was on before, they have something new coming out, I always love them to come back on and promote it because it's important that we allow those people to, you know, promote their good work.
Oh, absolutely. And I got to tell you, I read through his book, and there's a lot of good stuff in there. But I don't want to give it away too soon, and I really want we need to get Ken on the line so we can talk to him about his book, but I think he has really hit on a couple of points that I'm going to ask him about later on. So
I'm thrilled. We'll talk about that when he gets on the line.
When it's the moment.
The
moment.
But before that, I want to talk about kind of the crazy HIV weekend that I had. On Saturday, I volunteered and helped organize a – I didn't really help organize. I volunteered at the friggin' registration. But I also played in the annual HIV Kick tournament that they have here. And what it does is yesterday was National Latino AIDS Awareness Day. So what they do is in Center City, right next to Gino and Pat Steaks, you know, the famous place where people go to get cheesesteaks, there's a little soccer field, and they put this, you know, big – it's kind of like this sexual health event, but it's, you know, primarily focused to get people tested. They have a mobile testing from the Mazzoni Center that comes down, and they set up one of those big, Winnebagos, and, you know, you go in and get tested, rapid test. And yesterday was the first time – was the time that they had the most people come and get tested. They had, like, I think it was, like, close to 40 people that came and got tested that day. There's a tournament arranged. Like, there's adults. Like, the men had two teams, and the women adults had three teams. And then there's kids, you know, and the kids had four teams. So, you know, so it was game towards both, where a lot of people that played were mostly the kids. You know what I mean? But it was fun, and it was a great place to get, you know, information and to kind of mix it in the Latino community, and it was awesome.
Isn't that cool?
You know, it was like the whole event was in Spanish, so like every time something was said, I had to be like, what did he say? Because I didn't know what it was, and it was funny, but it was a good time, you know. And come on, you come out for a good cause and celebrate.
Oh, that's, you know, it's always good to get out and talk about something very, very serious and raise awareness and have a good time with it. You know, and that's important.
Yeah, I posted some photos from there of, like, the kids that were there playing, and I'll post more. I haven't gotten around to it. But you could just see they had so much fun. Like, when they were out there playing, their heart was in it, and they were, like, it was a big tournament for them, you know? And it was something they had a lot of fun with. And like I said, they had more people get tested this year than any of the previous years, because this is the third year that they did it.
Well,
and actually, the Falcons, the soccer team that I play for here in Philly, they actually sponsor and help organize and run it. My friend Ed and Greg do it. So
nice.
That was fun. It was a really long day, but it was a lot of fun. So that was
nice.
The first thing that I did, which was Saturday. Of course, Dad the AIDS Bear was with me. He's always with me when I go to these events. today, I had the Philadelphia AIDS Walk.
Wow.
So, yeah, it was, you know, every year I've been going since I've been active in the community. So this year, I ended up going with my friend Walter. Walter's gone before with me, and, you know, it was really cool because we were able to mix around and talk to people. And, like, the whole point of the walk is, you know, to raise awareness and to see the quilt. And there's, like, all these different things that they do at this event. I mean, I don't know how big the AIDS Walk is in your area, Johnny. Like, but we have, like, they have, like, bands. They do a warm-up. They have yoga sessions. They do the names. You know, the reading of the names, and then they have, you know, a guest speaker come up and speak, and the quilts there. Do they have all that, I guess, at yours, too?
They have something similar, yeah.
And I don't know if it's like, you know, if it's like cookie cutter, everybody does the same stuff, or...
No, I think, it, you know, it's different in each place. Reading of the names...
read names of people that have passed away... From HIV AIDS, our area.
From the very beginning?
I think it's...
because that would take all night.
Yeah, I think it's going to... I think it's just of the year. Like,
gotcha.
Of maybe, yeah, the year.
Gotcha.
And so it's, you know, it's a really nice piece to be in, and you just feel the love in the air. And this year, with all the amazing friends and support that, you know, I have on Facebook and the people just that know me, they... allowed me to raise over $1,000 for the AIDS Walk this year, which was the first time I ever raised, I think, any more than $500.
They allowed you?
You know, I'm sorry.
I think they encouraged you to raise money.
No, they donated the money.
Oh, really?
Yeah. So that's when I was shocked at these people. Yeah, so many, like, nice and people that are you know, that are able to afford to do this, and they do it. And for me to donate it in my name, you know, it just shows, I guess, how they feel about me, and I just want to show the love back to them, because it's incredible to have to know that the people would donate for that.
You know, it's all about sharing the love.
It is all about sharing the love.
Absolutely, it is. And I just what's that First Wives Club? Did you ever see that?
100 times.
Okay, Grow with Love.
Yes.
Yes. Yeah. That's what I'm thinking all of a sudden in my little pea brain.
But that wasn't even the highlight of it. The highlight of it was
there was more.
Yes, there's more. Of course, the Philadelphia AIDS Law. I got to hang out with Jack McEnroth, you know, the other co-host here on Pause I Am. So it was great to see him. And Mondo actually was there as well in Philly.
Oh, great.
You know, they were the guest speakers. So I got to actually meet Mondo for the first time, and we talked, and he's actually going to come on the show in January.
Oh, great.
Because they just released, you know, the Project Runway All-Stars, and he's a contestant on that.
Oh, that's brilliant.
So supposedly, yeah, so he'll come back on talking about that. So, you know, that's something we can all look forward to, Mondo, in January. So mark the calendars.
Oh, yay.
It'll be fun, yeah. So it was just awesome just to, you know, to be down there and just feel the love. And they put, like, all these really cool signs. You know, I told you before how they did the signs, and I'm sure you've seen the photos with every year and a statistic and, like, you know, whatever you are. I'm not trying to be ignorant, but I don't know the year. This year, Philadelphia came out, and Tom Hanks won this. This year, Pedro was on MTV. 2 years later, he passed away from AIDS. You know, I mean, and all the statistics going down, and just it was just amazing. It was really cool this year. So
yeah.
That's my rant of my HIV weekend. But you know what? I found myself talking about HIV a lot, and it was like my friend Walter, his birthday was Sunday. Happy birthday today. Happy birthday, Walter.
Well, happy birthday,
and
Walter.
The night before... last night we went out and he wanted to go out and have, you know, a drink for his birthday, so we went out to this bar called the Westbury, and we were sitting there just hanging out and, you know, talking to people, and then all of a sudden we were walking and the drink special was HIV, you know, the 50% of the proceeds or 100% of the proceeds go to HIV AIDS relief in Africa, you know, this Belvedere vodka that you bought that night. And it was just weird, and then all of a sudden that came up, and the bartender told us that, and then all of a sudden it just, like, sparked this conversation about HIV and AIDS, and all of a sudden we're just all talking about it. It's just very weird because it's something I never spoke about before.
Wow.
You know? Like, I didn't go out and talk to people about HIV and AIDS before. And it's just kind of weird how I'm so comfortable. And it's just, I'm saying it because I think it'll encourage people to feel a little bit more comfortable because it gets easier.
It does get easier, doesn't it?
Like a total stranger, I'm sitting there telling them, I'm HIV positive, I do this, you know, I'm sure you do it too.
Oh, you know, I do it all the time, and it just plops out of my mouth before I even realize what I had said. And oftentimes, it will be funny because I will say it, and then not just, you know, it's so matter of fact, it's da-da-da-da-da, yeah, you know, I'm living with HIV, da-da-da-da-da, yada-yada-yada. And I'm like, you know, 10 chapters down, and their face is still frozen in that, like, what? Huh? and it's like, oh, yeah, first time you're hearing this. Okay, let me go back. Questions?
Yeah, I mean, it's so odd that, you know, I'm so comfortable with it. It's just very odd because I was always so insecure about it for the first 5 years. Very insecure about it.
Yeah. I think we all get that way. You know, it's... I think there's that... and we could talk to Ken when he comes on about this, too, because he might be able to substantiate this. Just my own little theory and hypothesis is that whenever you're given any kind of news that is life-altering and life-changing, we all go into that little bit of denial, you know, that whole... I really do think you go through a whole grieving process.
Yeah.
I really do think you go through the, what is it, the five stages of grief, and eventually you get to the point of accepting. Right?
Right.
So we'll ask Ken that question when he comes on.
And you know what else is that? No, we will. Go ahead.
No. It's okay. It's your show.
I know. Our show. The other thing I was going to ask you is, what do you think about when people come up to you and they ask you something about HIV because they know that you are HIV positive, and then they go, I'm really sorry to ask you this, or this may be a dumb question. You know what I mean? Do you get that a lot when people come up with
rant? I get it all the time. And so anytime I hear that it's a dumb question, and my response back is the only dumb question is the one that's not asked.
Right.
So, you know, no question is dumb. You know, everybody has a point where they begin to learn. And it's usually when they ask that first question. And that, to me, is thrilling.
I agree. But the one thing I have to say is that I feel so relieved. Like, I feel like this monkey isn't on my back.
Uh-huh.
You know what I mean? Like, being so open about it. And I know, like, if you're going through a difficult time, there was somebody who was newly diagnosed on the website, on the Positive Network, and, you know, he kind of blogged about something and was talking about how he was thinking suicidal a little bit and things of that nature, and I reached out to him, and it was kind of weird because on Saturday he reached out to me and called me while I was at my event, and I took the time to, you know, talk to him because it was important, and just talking to having that interaction and being able to talk to him and make him feel better at the end of the phone call. You know what I mean? That's why I like being so open about it, because other people feel better about it when they know that somebody else who has this is confident and okay with it.
Well, you know, personally, I think that that all newly diagnosed folks need to seek out somebody who is positive and get that mentorship, you know, so they can ask those questions, so they can, you know, be with someone who understands and knows what they're going through. It's so important to have that that safety net. But that said, the more experienced HIV positive person needs to have patience. And needs to understand that not everybody gets to the same place at the same time. And some people take longer, some people don't take near as long. And it is just very, very, it's a tricky situation. So, you know, if anybody out there who's HIV positive and has been for a while or feel that they're in a place where they can mentor a newly diagnosed person, you know, really ask yourself, are you ready to be in that mentorship? And that, because you're going to be a support person. You're going to be that, you're going to be part of the support network.
I agree.
And
it's good
for you, Robert.
Good
for you. But good for you for being that mentor for that guy, for that person.
And it really made me feel like so, like, worth everything. You know, like, it was so worth everything that I'm doing just to have that phone call.
Yeah. If all it takes is one, then you've done your job.
That's right. That's,
you know,
right.
It's
just real quick, I have a couple people online, and a lot of people have their number blocked. So I don't know if one of them is our guest. So if Ken is on the line, I just want him to press the number one button, which should let me know that he wants to speak to the host, and I will bring you on. If you're just listening, then just stay. And it is Ken. So I'm going to go ahead and bring our guest on tonight. Ken Howard, welcome to the show.
Hello. How are you?
Good. How are you?
Good. Thank you for having me.
Well, good. We're glad to have you. You're still 3 hours into your day.
Yeah,
more than,
that's right.
Yeah.
It's still a little after 6 in L.A. time. nice little sunset.
We are dragging here, so you got to keep up the pace, Ken.
Okay.
we are resting everything on your shoulders today.
Just a little pressure, huh?
No pressure. Let's go. Come on.
So, Ken, I know you have this new book, you know, that just came out, and I want to kind of, for people who may not have listened to the show when you were on previously or maybe first time listening to Podcrime Radio tonight,
uh-huh.
Can you give us a little bit of a background of, like, your story of when you were diagnosed?
Well, my story, coming up on 21 years, November 3rd. It's November 3rd, 1990. So, and that was right around the time that I started some of the prerequisites for grad school and then went to grad school. And since then, I've been a licensed therapist now. And I'm in full-time private practice in West Hollywood, which is, you know, part of Los Angeles, or part of Los Angeles County. It's its own city, known as the Creative City, or some people just call it the Gay City. But, you know.
Well, it is the Gay City. I grew up there.
Oh, cool.
Yeah. We hope.
Yeah.
Yay. Anyway,
so you know, and I worked at a lot of the AIDS service organizations in LA County, and was co-chair of the LA County HIV Mental Health Task Force for many years, and co-chair of the annual HIV Mental Health Conference. So we were always, you know, advocates about the mental health aspects of HIV, of which there are many.
Oh my gosh, aren't there? Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. So it'll be 21. Last year was really significant with, you know, hitting like the 20-year mark and the two-decade mark. You know, now that it's 21, I just want to go out and buy my virus a drink. You know,
get that old virus blaster.
You know, drinking for two now. You know, double them up.
Oh God, take it out. Have your way with him.
That's right.
That's funny. So
the good news is that it doesn't talk back.
Yeah, exactly. I was thinking yesterday, my virus is as old as the lead singer of the boy band that I saw perform yesterday at the big mall. Now, this cute lead singer of this boy band. I thought, oh, he's 21. He could be my virus, you know.
Tell him that.
Exactly.
I dare you.
Here's my HIV virus.
Now, there's an opening line.
Exactly.
Oh, you'll never get a date again. Oh, that's funny.
That is. Oh, when I get to 21 years, I will be stealing that line.
Yeah.
But, you know, you've been living with HIV for 21 years, and you're a 10-year cancer survivor as well.
Yeah, yeah, that's actually, this year's kind of the, you know, the 10-year, and right around now was the first, you know, kind of symptoms of that and all that. And I was just, you know, extremely lucky in the sense that, you know, my cancer battle was a lot less arduous than other people's. But, you know, that I think that was actually as scary as the HIV, really. It really, that's a scary one, you know.
Well,
and then
you know,
also December is coming up on the one-year anniversary of my second hip replacement. I had one in 2008 from HIV-related avascular necrosis, and then the right one held on for a couple more years, and then I did that December a year ago, so... I'm always reluctant to say that, though, because I don't mean to scare people that everyone who has HIV, you know, has to have hip replacements. You know, avascular necrosis only happens to some, but it happened in my case. So, but I had a really good surgeon, and I had really good physical therapy, and now I don't even realize that I have, you know, artificial hips until I, like, go through an airport metal detector or something. So, and then they're like, oh, yeah. So it's a lot of anniversaries this year.
Wow.
Yeah. So
happy anniversary all around.
Thank you. Yeah. So the book, in a certain sense, commemorates the anniversaries.
My goodness. So you are still practicing?
Yes.
Yeah. So you still haven't quit. I'm not going to make that joke.
Still haven't perfected it yet.
exactly.
You know, I was listening to what you were saying, you know, about the, you know, the stages when someone's newly diagnosed, and in my ears were really perking up. And, you know, I think that's true because that's what I do. I mean, I work with all kinds of people. I specialize in working with gay men, and then occasionally I work with people who are positive, and occasionally I work with straight people. But, you know, I'm kind of the go-to person in L.A. or in Southern California, especially for people who are just, you know, freaked out because they're newly diagnosed.
Yeah.
And that's, you know, that's the clinical term for it. It's just freaking out. And, you know, and sometimes, you know, they'll come in, you know, once or twice, and they're not ready to really talk about it or work on it. They're still in the denial stage, you know, the Kubler-Ross denial stage. Others, you know, one that happened last week where a guy really thought that he was exposed, and he was waiting for his test and on pins and needles, and then it ultimately came back negative. So, you know, so I work with guys who are not only newly diagnosed or ones who are at risk, and then it starts to be about, you know, some risk reduction talk and stuff like that,
mm-hmm.
which usually has a lot to do with, you know, finances or self-esteem or something like that.
So I had a great question, and it just popped out of my head.
When did you begin writing this, Ken?
It took a long time because I'm so busy with my practice. You know, my practice is just all day, Monday through Friday. And so, you know, I wrote it in tiny little pieces, like at night, you know, when everything was quiet, and occasionally in the morning or if I had a cancellation and I had a free hour. But, you know, it took several years, and the outline was done early. And then I just actually wrote it in order of the chapters. And then, of course, you know, the production part of it, I finished writing it, and then I had to learn how to publish, which, you know, that was its own adventure. In fact, the book came out at the end of July, and I'm still waiting for it to be available on Amazon. Right now it's available on Lulu, LULU.com, and that's the publisher. But Amazon has a lot of books to catalog, so they have kind of a backlog. But it is available for Amazon Kindle. So.
Yeah, I was reading about that. I was out on looking at Smashwords, your book, Your Way, and I was seeing where...
Yeah, it's available there. Smashwords.com, BarnesandNoble.com for Nook, Amazon, all the, you know, the e-book readers. And then if you want the, you know, the old school paperback or the hardcover, it's on Lulu.
I got to tell you, and I'm going to go off track here just for a minute. I haven't bought a real book in over a year because all of my books are on my iPad.
Wow, that's great.
And I find that I've actually read more.
Huh. Yeah.
Go figure, huh?
Yeah.
Yep. Anyway, I digress. We come back to Ken. So Ken, tell us a little bit about your journey through through putting this book together.
Well, I think it was the book is kind of a reflection of my practice, and my practice, I think, is in some ways a reflection of my life. I mean, I think I talk about this in the book a little bit about how, you know, I also have another ebook out that's on Amazon called Positive Outlook, Inspiration, Motivation, and Support for Living with HIV Today. That's just on Amazon Kindle as an ebook for now, and then we'll do other versions later. But, you know, I say it in there, too, about, you know, I really started to be, I wanted to become a therapist for a long time, but, you know, really the height of the AIDS crisis kicked it into high gear. So, you know, I just felt like I had to do something, and I just didn't feel quite cut out to become a doctor because I wasn't that interested in math and science. I hadn't had a lot of classes in that in college, and it would have been a big deal to have to go back to medical school, and I just felt other people could do that better. But I did have more of an interest and an aptitude in the mental health aspects. And so I started volunteering as just a volunteer-trained peer counselor kind of thing called the Phone Buddy Program at AIDS Project Los Angeles. And, you know, and then just it went from there. I did the the application process, ended up at the USC, University of Southern California School of Social Work. And just last week I was invited to teach there. They want me to teach the LGBT social work course. So,
oh, wow.
Very excited about that.
Congratulations.
Thanks. So, it comes full circle coming home to my alma mater. But I love the program because they let me work with gay men, and then I was able to do some HIV work at the LA Gay and Lesbian Center, where my first internship was. And then I worked at a psych hospital just for, the psychiatric experience. And then it was soon after that that I got a job that was funded by LA County Office of AIDS Programs and Policy to be the HIV counselor for positive people at a homeless shelter in Hollywood, which has been torn down and it's now a Target. But but I was the HIV counselor on staff there. So, and that's when I started writing about HIV and homelessness. And so and then it evolved from there, and then did that until about 2004, and then went out on my own in my own practice, so which I do either in person or on the phone.
Okay.
So they don't necessarily live in California to see, your patient.
Right. They do for psychotherapy, for insurance reimbursement, but for the phone coaching that I do, it can be by phone, and that can be anywhere in the country. We just have to call it coaching instead of therapy, and we can't do an insurance bill for it. So,
right.
Yeah.
Okay.
That was one of the questions that was tweeted to me. So,
I actually wanted to.
Oh, go ahead.
No, go.
Well, I was going to say that what was happening in my work, kind of reflected what was happening, in my personal life, my best friend that I had been tested with, we had never been boyfriends or been involved with each other. We were the same age. We'd gone to high school together. And he tested positive in kind of summer of 1990. And then, when his test came back positive, I thought, oh, boy, we're both only 26. I better get checked again. And then I got tested again, and then it was positive that time. So, we were both 26, and we thought at that time, we were like, oh, that just happens to, older guys in, Silver Lake in L.A. or in Greenwich Village in New York or something like that.
I didn't mean to blurt out that laughter when you said Silver Lake because I can relate.
Well, because it's like West Hollywood is generally known for the younger guys in L.A. and Silver Lake is generally known for the older guys. And yeah. I was just being my little, cocky little ageist, which has really come back to bite me, but my best friend and I had tested together, and then he finally passed away in 1998, and it was a funny story because 1998 is after the advent of protease inhibitors, but he had gotten involved in more or less a cult that was influencing him not to take meds and to only buy their vitamins. They made their own vitamins and their own water filters, and he got brainwashed into thinking that these were better than medications, and by the time he realized that was a mistake, it was too late. And so ever since then, I've really had a I really have a keen eye about charlatanism in HIV. I think and misinformation. I think there's a lot of that.
Well, yeah. It's that all that denial is.
Yeah.
And I'm going to use a completely non-clinical term. It's all that denial is bullshit.
Yeah.
In my language. Absolutely. It really is.
Because it really is. It really is messing. With people's lives. And I think that if he hadn't gotten involved in that cult, I think he would be alive today. And that's. It's a very sobering thought.
It really is.
Yeah. So, because that was right about the time I started speaking at conferences, and it was right about the time I started publishing articles, and it just, I think it created kind of the fire in my belly that's still there. I mean, I think losing a lot of people in the early days of the AIDS crisis created somewhat of a fire in my belly to do this work, and then I think that, certainly spurred it on. And I think what continues it is a continuing need because, you know, people need the help and fighting stigma. I've worked with a lot of people on fighting stigma.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I'm not too happy about, you know, the persistence of stigma. This is now 30 years into the epidemic, and you still have people walking around thinking that you can get HIV from a water fountain or from a handshake.
Right.
You know,
yeah.
It's kind of like, you know, and I look at that and I think, what's wrong? You know, what's wrong about our public health system? What's wrong about medical education? What's wrong about education in America in general that you still have so many people, including gay men, I might add, who are just so petrified of HIV that they just can't think clearly, you know?
Yeah.
I'm married to an HIV negative guy. We've been together for over 9 years, and we got married before Prop 8 hit in California. We were one of the 18,000 couples. And, you know, I always kind of say to people, you know, if we can do it, anybody can do it. You know, it's I'm kind of a big believer in serodiscordant relationships for that reason. But yet you have a lot of HIV-negative gay men who won't go near a positive man to date him because of just fear. And, you know, that's just not rational. You can actually have a very active sex life and be a serodiscordant couple.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely. I wanted to ask you, with the book and the publishing of your book,
uh-huh.
Is it safe to say that you could use this as a tool to get people who aren't what's the word?
Self-empowered?
No. Adhering to their meds.
Uh-huh.
Because to me, I think getting people into treatment HIV treatment, HIV therapy,
uh-huh.
and coupling that with mental health care and self-empowerment exactly is crucial to get them to take their meds. It's crucial to get them into a safe environment.
Yeah,
I
talk about that in the health chapter of Self-Empowerment, Have the Life You Want, about all the different tips I've learned over the years about dealing with doctors and how to think about your health care, you know, in more general terms. Because the book is actually for a general audience, for a general adult audience. It's not necessarily gay-specific or HIV-specific. And I wanted to do that because I wanted it to reach a very wide audience and be just, you know, a self-help book. The book that's on for Amazon Kindle about positive outlook has several essays about dealing with the emotional aspects of getting your numbers back, like your viral load or your CD4, or any blood test numbers, I think, that have an emotional effect. And then just kind of understanding it all, because it's, you know, it really is a language. I think to learn to live with HIV well, you have to learn a glossary of vocabulary terms to understand it.
Yeah, it's overwhelming.
Yeah, because it really is, it's so much. Because, you know, what do you talk? You talk about the fact that, you know, every medication has two names, the chemical name and the brand name, or do you talk about, you know, the different, certainly a lot of abbreviations.
Oh, yeah.
You know, even HIV is an abbreviation. You know, it's kind of...
Yeah.
You know, a friend of mine who teaches, he works with the UCLA School of Public Health, and he and I used to do a lot of conference work together, and it was an offshoot of the UCLA School of Nursing. But he gave a presentation one time on the U.S.-Mexico border and, you know, was well into it, talking about all this kind of stuff. And he said, any questions? And a guy raised his hand and said, yeah, what's a cell?
Uh-uh.
So it was like, oh, boy, we really have to back up here because, you know, I think in order to understand HIV, especially for people who are newly diagnosed, you know, you really have to go back to, you know, any kind of classes you've had in biology about, you know.
Oh, that's biology 101.
Yeah, exactly. And
yeah.
Some people, you know, I only had, you know, I was a theater major in college. I didn't have more than, I think, one biology class. I had to learn all that stuff.
Yeah.
Yeah, you
did have to learn all that stuff. So what do you and I'm flipping through pages in the book because I wanted to ask you a couple of questions specifically.
Oh, sure.
About, you talk about, you know, you have this whole section on mental health, going from defining and the issues and symptoms and how mental health is many times a sign of no symptom.
In a sense, I think that's a thing that's true. You know, with doctors sometimes when they do a manual physical for somebody, you know, it's unremarkable. You know, their symptoms are unremarkable. They're just fine. You know, if nothing hurts, you know, nothing looks weird, nothing feels weird, and nothing functions weird, then, you know, we're considered generally healthy. And I think that's kind of true with mental health too. You know, if you don't have paranoia, if you don't have hallucinations, if you don't have poor contact with reality, then you don't have schizophrenia. You know, if you don't have obsessions, you don't have compulsions, you probably don't have obsessive compulsive disorder. It's kind of like a zero sum thing. I mean, I think there are certain, you know, indicators of mental health that indicate the presence of mental health. I think things like a sense of humor and a general optimistic outlook and a sense of gratitude, a sense of productivity in both your home and your work. Or, you know, if you're on disability and you're not working, then some other form of purpose, you know, up to your abilities. You know, so it mental health, I think, can be defined as either, you know, the presence of symptoms, or maybe it's the absence of symptoms, and maybe it's the presence of, you know, the good things. We want that. I always say in therapy that, you know, therapy is the process of reducing the bad in your life and increasing the good.
So you talk about in your book, and I'm going to plug it again, it's Self-Empowerment, Have the Life You Want, by Ken Howard.
Uh-huh.
And we have the author on the line with us. I sounded like a real radio show host.
Available at lulu.com. Thank you. That's very
exactly.
Sweet, 'cause it's, you know, I'm just excited about the book, and I want to, you know, to share it with people and, you know, and get feedback from it. It's fun to hear what people's favorite chapter is, because it's always something different.
And as I read through it, and I'm probably what I'm going to end up doing is, because I've read it quickly over the last couple weeks,
uh-huh.
So I'm probably going to go sit back down and actually read it and
yeah.
And read, you know, every word. But you really get where I get the point from all of this is we make the choice to get what we want out of life.
Yeah.
And if we choose not to, you know, if we choose to allow our siblings or our spouses or our children or our, you know, if we allow those external forces that we can't control into our life and affect us in a negative and in a toxic way,
uh-huh.
Then we probably won't get the life that we probably have the life that we really want because we're choosing to go down that path.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah, you really have to make a conscious decision that you're not going to buy into helplessness. You know, I think the external world has to cooperate a little bit. I mean, I work with people in the recession who are unemployed who are really working hard to find a job and they're not finding one. You know, at some point, you know, the external world does have to cooperate. But I keep going back to what Jack Canfield said in his book that I like so much called The Success Principles. And he said event plus response equals outcome. You know, lots of events can happen to people, like being diagnosed with HIV or having a car accident or having an illness or having a death in your family or something, you know, or getting a pink slip, you know, at work. Lots of events can happen. It's our response to them that affects the outcome. You know,
true.
You know, 'cause one guy can get a pink slip at work and get laid off and, you know, go to the bar on his way home from work and, you know, drink and drive and crash his car and kill somebody and spend the rest of his life in jail. Or the same person can get that same pink slip and go straight home and sit down on their computer and update their resume and call 20 friends and tell them, hey, I got laid off today, I'm looking for a job. you know, send out 10 resumes the next morning and sign up for all the job hunting things online and have a job, you know, in a week. You know, same pink slip, very, very different response and outcome. And really, you could say that about anything.
No, you're absolutely right. Can you give our listeners who haven't had the opportunity yet to read the book, just kind of a glimpse in one of your case studies that you did, and I'm actually interested in Simone.
Uh huh.
Tell us why you picked Simone for your case study in this particular instance.
Well, you know, that's actually based on a real person, and of course, because therapists are always, you know, interested in confidentiality. Simone is. I kind of have to think about who the real person was and who Simone is in the book. You know.
I'll give you a hint. I think it's the. It's all about the.
Family chapter.
The family. Family structure.
That one was really. It struck me because you know, the real Simone was such a wonderful lady, you know, in her own right. But you know, she lived in her father's shadow. And, you know, I think it's about societies we live in and the position we have in society. It's a little bit like, you know, I mean, being the good queen that I am, I mean, it's a little bit like Judy Garland and Liza Minnelli. You know, it's like, you know, growing up in the shadow of your mom being this great star and yet, you know, having a career all your own and, you know, winning an Oscar and all that stuff. You know, for Simone, she really had to learn what it was like, you know, to love her family, to love Gordon, her father, but also to, you know, take responsibility for her own addiction, you know, her cocaine addiction damn near killed her. And, you know, and then fortunately, you know, she got to the program. I work with a lot of people in the AA program. I'm not in it myself, but I always call myself a friend of the family because they really, I think the combination of recovery in the 12 steps and therapy is a really good combination. That's how a person really gets better. You know, I saw her really improve with the combination of therapy and AA and a good relationship, too.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So it's really, you know, and I have to say that, folks, we have literally I'm doing math here, and this isn't good. We have about 12 minutes left of the hour. I mean, this has flown by. It's you know, thank God this isn't a billable hour for you.
See?
Yeah,
fun,
see,
fun,
exactly. It's really the book is really geared in a tool set for people to read and guide them through making healthy choices.
Yes. And I think to give them a perspective to really set them up for success. You know, the tagline, I mean, the title, Self-Empowerment, Have the Life You Want, but the tagline is how to close the gap between how life is and how you would like it to be. And I think there's always, you know, and that's a process. You know, somebody asked me recently, do I have the life I want? You know, there's still goals that I have and there's still, you know, dreams and visions that I work toward, but, you know, getting closer all the time. And, you know, and how to close the gap between how life is and how you would like it to be in different areas of your life, whether it's your health, your mental health, your career, your finances, your family, your spirituality, that's a big chapter in the book, and your role in the community. I think role in the community is a really important thing, too, because it helps you feel like you're a part of, that you're not just you and all your, you know, successes and failures and problems and attributes and all that, but you're really doing that in a community context because we really can't get by without each other.
No, it you know, Hillary said it, takes a village.
Exactly. Yeah. And so you know, it kind of gets people with the right mindset in all those different areas, and then it's kind of like, okay, armed with that, then you can go out and, you know, and close that gap. I always say it's working toward the ideal vision of your professional self, everything that you want to do in your career or your hobbies or whatever, because I work with a lot of people in disability and career issues and those senses. are really about sense of purpose, about what gives life enjoyment to them. And then, you know, your ideal personal self, you know, living well as a single person, finding a partner if that's what you want, having a good relationship if you're already in a relationship, and a lot of stuff on the in the relationship chapter, because I work with a lot of couples. I do a lot of couples therapy.
Wow.
That's
it's fun because
cool.
It works. You know, I love seeing couples improve like that because, you know, sometimes, you know, couples therapy will help a couple go from being not very happy to being actually really happy, which that's really nice.
One of the things I wanted to point out was you said, you know, you wrote this book because you wanted people, a lot of people fear going to a therapist. There's like that kind of taboo. They don't want to go. They think
they
have that kind of like that stigma to it. And you kind of wanted to give them, the insides of kind of what it was like by including like the case studies and stuff. Why do you think that taboo is there, that stigma of going to a therapist?
Well, I think, you know, they teach this in grad school programs for mental health that, you know, I mean, there has been, you know, historically a lot of stigma, and the mental health field has really earned it in some cases. You know, movies like The Snake Pit and, you know, these movies where, you know, mental institutions were just hell on earth. And, you know, and before the days of, you know, very established patients' rights. And, you know, and there's a lot of misinformation out there. You know, when Tom Cruise really took, what's her name? Oh, she's in Adam's Family now, Brooke Shields. You know, he really took her to task for taking an antidepressant after pregnancy because he's a Scientologist and they don't believe in that. You know, so, and I work with people sometimes who, you know, may be very depressed or have another condition that needs medication and they don't want to do it because, you know, they've heard bad stories about it. And, you know, some people take medications and have side effects and some people don't. But I think you have to work with real information, not just rumor. You know, so there, you know, the stigma is in some ways it's founded, but in some ways it's also, you know, an unfounded fear. I once worked with a guy on a first session. He said, you know, I had your business card on my desk for a year before I got the guts to call you. And, you know, it's a really humbling experience. I don't think of myself as being that big and scary, but, you know, I know
okay,
the
wait,
process.
Wait, Ken, have you seen you? have you?
Maybe it's that third eye I have. I don't know. You know, no.
It's those guns you've got. Ken, those guns.
I really do promise, you know, I promise I don't bite, you know. I bite my off hours, you know.
Don't bite my off hours. Yay. We went there, yes.
We have a question here in the chat room from Ken.
Cool.
He asked, do you believe in, is it Kubler-Ross model of the grieving process?
Yeah, I mean, I'm not like a super expert in Elizabeth Kubler-Ross. I mean, I think I like, you know, read her book probably 15 years ago. And I think that, you know, it's, you know, she had the theory about coming to terms with death or coming to terms with terminal illness of anger, bargaining, denial, depression, and acceptance. And, you know, I've seen that. I think she was very observant. I think those stages are very present. I think people can have some of them, but not all of them. I think that they can have different stages. Some are shorter, some are longer. But definitely when somebody is facing, you know, either an HIV diagnosis or just another type of really big stressor. I mean, I think people went through a lot of the Kubler-Ross stages after 9/11. We all went through that. You know, at first it was, you know, kind of a denial or a disbelief of, you know, and certainly a lot of anger and you know, and I think now with the 10th anniversary of 9/11, it's a certain amount of acceptance of, you know, okay, this happened, but let's hope it doesn't happen again. You know, and I think people need help through those stages because you know, those are challenging emotions. All of those, you know, every one of them except acceptance is kind of stressful. Acceptance is kind of the last stage and the nicest stage, but you know, nobody wants to be, you know, angry or depressed or sad.
And sometimes you can go and revert back.
You can. If any type of, in a period of stress or in a period of loss, you can regress to a previous stage. I think I had a little bit of that. You know, I mean, I think there was a time after my first hip replacement where, you know, I was just working really hard in physical therapy and I was getting better, but it was hurting a little bit. And, you know, there was just one moment there where I just kind of had this moment of sadness. And even then I was like, ah, you know, Kubler-Ross, I'm back at the depression stage about, you know, why do I have to deal with this? But I, you know, got back on the horse and went back to physical therapy and worked and, you know, and I feel great now. So, you know, I think when people go through those stages, it's just a signal that they need support. They need to talk to a loved one, or they need to talk to a therapist, or they need to get out their Louise Hay, you know, CDs, or they need to do something. You know, they need to do something to support themselves. Or they can read self-empowerment.
Read his book. Read Ken Howard's book.
I call it The Portable Psychotherapist.
So, Ken, you're also on Twitter. I just found you on Twitter, so
I'm on Twitter and on Facebook. On Facebook, I have two fan pages, the Ken Howard Counseling, Psychotherapy, and Coaching page for gay men, and the Self-Empowerment, Have the Life You Want fan page on Facebook. And then also I have a podcast that's on Zune, right. Zune.com, or on Podcast Alley, or just iTunes. I need feedback on the iTunes one, if anybody wants to leave a comment on the podcast. But the podcast, Have the Life You Want with Ken Howard, LCSW, that gets over 1,000 downloads a month, which is really cool, in countries all over the world. And it's really kind of fun that, you know, my podcast voice is all over the world, even to places that I don't really get to. But it's kind of fun to, you know, I just wonder what the podcast listeners in Sri Lanka are thinking of the show. but I'm glad that they do it. So. But it's fun to do.
Okay, I have to tell you, we're down at 3 minutes, 2 minutes
left
of the show. Can you believe this?
Wow, that's quick.
I don't want it to end.
I know. I'll come back sometime.
Absolutely.
If you'll have me, I would love to.
Oh, we'd love to have you back. And next time we'll have...
Are there any more
we'll
questions from people?
Right now I don't have any coming from the chat room right now. We have our
I was
right
wondering with the person, I going back to the person who did ask the question, you know, do I believe in the Kubler-Ross stages? I mean, I think, you know, Kubler-Ross's stages were a theory, and, you know, there's lots of theories in psychotherapy, and sometimes we subscribe to them, and sometimes we discard them in favor of other theories or even our own. And, you know, and I'm a little worried about which stage the person was in that was asking me about Kubler-Ross, because, you know, as I said, I think most of those stages is a person needs support. So I think if that person asking the question, you know, is going through one of the stages, I would ask him or her, you know, what kind of support he or she needs.
Great. Well, we are almost down. So what I want to do is I want to make sure we get your website out. People can go and get the book at www.havethelifeyouwant.com, right?
Yes. They can just go directly to Lulu, LULU.com, and then just search for self-empowerment, or search for Ken Howard, LCSW, stands for Licensed Clinical Social Worker, and they'll find in either hardcover or paperback, or just on Amazon if you have a Kindle.
Right. And what is your website where people can go if they would like to come see you?
That is GayTherapyLA.com. It also is named Pause Therapist. If you just go to PauseTherapist.com, there will be articles there. A lot of the articles that are in the Positive Outlook ebook on Amazon are actually on the website, too. It just depends on what kind of format you want. But PauseTherapist.com has other articles and other goodies.
That's great. Ken, thanks so much for joining us tonight.
Well, thank you. It's great to be here.
Ken, this was just a fantastic... I had a great time this hour.
I did too. Thanks so much.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
Take care. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. And remember, folks, you can find more information on our guest at PauseTherapist.com. His book you can be found self-empowerment, Have the Life You Want by Ken Howard, can be found at lulu.com. More information on Jeremy Dunn at positivelyspeaking.com. More information on myself and the radio show at posam.com. Have a great night, Jeremy.
You too.
Talking to you.
All right. See you next week.
Good one.
Bye.